You're listening to a short free clip from the full episode of this week's members-only bonus episode of the 7th Row podcast. We release full free episodes every 2 weeks, and in the weeks in between, such as this one, we release shorter, more informal bonus episodes for the members who make everything we do at 7th Row possible. On this week's bonus episode, myself, Orla Smith, and my co-host Alex Heaney were joined by Brett Pardy and Mary-Angela Rowe to talk about Joel Coen's new adaptation of The Tragedy of Macbeth, starring Denzel Washington and Frances McDormand. This episode is a sort of follow-up to a bonus episode we did in November about the Almeida's recent production of Macbeth, which starred Saoirse Ronan and James McArdle. So in today's episode, we compare that production with Coen's film and with a lot of other Macbeth adaptations from over the years. What you're listening to now is a short, free clip from the full episode. To listen to the whole thing, as well as past bonus episodes like the one on the Almeida Macbeth, become a member at 7th-row.com/join and enjoy a whole host of other perks.
So on today's episode, we'll be discussing Joel Coen's film adaptation of Macbeth, The Tragedy of Macbeth. And this is sort of a companion episode to our earlier bonus episode from late 2021, where we talked about the Almeida Theater's production of The Tragedy of Macbeth, starring Saoirse Ronan and James McArdle. And for that episode, I was joined by Mary-Angela Rowe and Orla Smith, who are here today. So Mary-Angela.
Hello.
And Orla.
Hello.
And we're also joined by our associate editor, Brett Pardy.
Hello.
So for related episodes to this episode, obviously the bonus episode on Tragedy of Macbeth, which is episode number 17.
And it's really a companion piece to this episode because we originally wanted to do a comparison episode between the Almeida production and Joel Coen's film, but timing lineup. And so we've done them as two episodes, but I really recommend listening to them back to back.
Another related episode is episode 108, where we talk about Terence Rattigan's The Deep Blue Sea, both as a stage production, the one by Carrie Cracknell, which was recorded by NT Live and stars Helen McRory and Tom Burke. And we compared that to the Terence Davies film, The Deep Blue Sea, starring Rachel Weisz and Tom Hiddleston. So I think that is kind of similar format-ish to what these two bonus episodes on Macbeth are going to take, because one was the James McArdle Saoirse Ronan production was one that was a stage production recorded for the screen and disseminated live streamed around the world. And then, of course, The Tragedy of Macbeth that we're talking about today, Joel Coen's, is a explicitly made as a film. So, Mary-Angela, do you want to give us the synopsis of Macbeth?
Sure. This is the Coles Notes for Macbeth. So Macbeth, a Scottish lord, and his wife Lady Macbeth have ambitions to take the Scottish throne. Acting on a prophecy from three witches and spurred on by his wife, Macbeth murders the rightful king of Scotland and usurps the throne from the king's son Malcolm, who flees. Once they rule, however, Macbeth turns his mind to the witch's other prophecy, that his friend Banquo's son, Fleance, will eventually sit on the throne. As Macbeth and his wife go mad with fear and guilt, Macbeth descends into a spiral of murder. He's finally overthrown when two misleading prophecies from the witches are eventually fulfilled, and Malcolm takes the throne, an ambiguous ending because we know that someday Fleance will be king.
Here's the trailer.
Pricking of my thumbs, something wicked this way comes.
So I guess a bit of context for this film. Frances McDormand, who plays Lady Macbeth in this, first played it on stage at the Berkeley Rep in 2016, which I actually saw that production.
How was it?
Bad.
Oh, no.
Maybe not quite. Maybe worse than this film, but I would say her Lady Macbeth in that was better. Maybe because the Macbeth was so terrible that it didn't matter that they were in two different movies.
Oh, dear.
What's the Macbeth?
Oh, I don't know. I can look it up. With some guy, it was like, it was one of those like star productions where you haven't heard of anybody else, but.
It'd be kind of intimidating.
Well, and she played one of the witches.
Frances McDormand.
And some guy.
She doubled as one of the witches in that with a beard. I mean, that was a production that had no ideas. I'm not sure I'm convinced that she and Joel Cohen have since come up with ideas about the play, but I feel like that's where this originated.
Well,
I might be totally off base here, but I feel like Shakespeare doesn't necessarily play to Frances McDormand's strengths.
What do you mean?
Well, when I think of her as an actor, she's really good at communicating by looking. And so when something's so dialogue-based, I'm not sure it's really what I think of her as what makes her really stand out. Like, I'm not saying she...
And the editing in this film did not help with that either.
Yeah, I'm not saying she's like... bad at it. I'm just saying
I think it's very hard to be very good in Shakespeare without a strong directorial vision.
And I do think that, like, watching this Macbeth film, one of the biggest problems is that I feel like with a text that's adapted so often, I feel like to justify adapting it again, you need to have like a strong take or vision of what your version of Macbeth is, and I just couldn't get a handle on why Joel Cohen wanted to make a Macbeth from watching it, other than that, I mean, he is married to Frances McDormand. He saw her play Lady Macbeth on stage, and he said, "Hello, wife, I want to make you Macbeth on the screen." And which is funny, because I also don't think he does, like, super great justice to Lady Macbeth as a character in the film.
No.
But, like, I think that's probably was the spark for this film, was her playing that character and then them thinking up this adaptation. I mean, I don't have any evidence for that, but, like, what else drew them to it? It's not on the screen if something else did.
And this is, Ethan Coen has decided that he wants to write plays. So this is Joel Coen's first solo project. And... I did find it funny. Our friend of the podcast, Angela Moretta, said to me that Inside Llewyn Davis was like a preview of what would happen with Macbeth.
Yeah, I mean, Inside Llewyn Davis is about, which the Coen brothers directed, is about a songwriter who used to work in a duo and then is like really struggling. His partner has died and... like you said, I think that's a premonition of the fact that they shouldn't have been working separately. Or maybe Joel Cohen. We'll see what Ethan Cohen on his own.
So before we get into the meat of what we thought of this particular movie, Alex, there was something I wanted to ask you. And this is something that I've kind of wondered about for a while when we talk about Shakespeare. You often talk about whether a play has ideas or not. And like, I kind of don't know what you mean by that.
I mean, does it have like a vision? So you need, I think that you can't, I don't think a Shakespeare adaptation is very, or production is interesting if all you're doing is like, well, we said the lines. You have to think about, what is the world in which this is rooted in? What cuts am I making and why am I making these cuts? What aspects of the play am I going to bring out? So, you know, to take Hamlet as an example, it's like, is this a family drama or is this a geopolitical story? It could be both, but you have to decide where on that spectrum you're going to lie.
I mean, maybe it's that a Shakespeare text has lots of ideas that you could pull out. Is the adaptation picking one to develop and or a few to develop and focus on and explore rather than just presenting the text without thinking about the different things that you
And for Macbeth, like I just watched, I had a very Macbethy weekend. I watched the James McAvoy adaptation, which doesn't really use any of the original dialogue, but is pretty brilliant, from Shakespeare Retold. And that's like Macbeth set in a kitchen. I rewatched the Kurzweil Macbeth, and I watched like 90% of the Rupert Gould production that was basically a film. Like, it's obviously kind of comes from a play production, but it is pretty much a film with Patrick Stewart and Rupert Gould's wife, Kate Fleetwood. So I've been thinking a lot about, like, what do you have to have a take on with Macbeth? And I think I kind of made a list of 6 criteria. And I think one thing that you have to have in order to make sense is you have to have a, like, have some understanding of what the relationship is between Macbeth and Lady Macbeth. Like, do I buy these two as people who might be in the same room together? I think if you want the Banquo death to mean something, you either have to have to make us really believe that Banquo and Macbeth are pals, or you have to make us really believe that Banquo is being menacing, or possibly both.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's impossible to talk about Macbeth without talking about equivocation, which is something that was happening in Shakespeare's time when Macbeth was written, where basically Catholics were kind of like, well, as long as you think the truth, God will know what's in your mind. But you don't have to, you know, you can just sort of withhold details. And this had a lot to do with like hiding priests and various other things so that you would go to trial and it would basically be like you would cross your fingers and say whatever. And this is a play that not only says equivocation a bunch of times, but is about the fact that people say one thing and mean another. Or there's a double meaning in it. Like, you can't take what the witches say at face value. And, you know, that's in the text, like Banquo saying that, you know, sometimes they tell you a truth in order to deceive you with something larger. And it's also like, you know, there's lots of loopholes in what they say, and Macbeth willfully ignores them. So I think you have to have some take on like what the witches are doing. Are they meant to be some kind of malevolent force? Is there a way you can help us understand that the witches are not necessarily trustworthy? Like, the really interesting thing that they did in the Patrick Stewart Rupert Gould Macbeth is that the witches, it's sort of set in, part of it is where we meet the witches, it's like in a field hospital, and the witches are nurses, but the patient that they're caring for, it seems like they deliberately kill him. And so, like, from the minute you meet them, there's this weird thing of like, okay, they're dressed like nurses, so I should trust them, but they just killed a dude. So I don't know if I can trust them. So like, it's building into the way that the world is built. The, like, should I believe this? And like, Duncan is dressed like a Soviet / Nazi. So you're already like, I don't know about this power structure. Is this something you want to aspire to? So like, it's built. I don't think every production has to have this level of like, cause this is a production that's really interested in equivocation, but it's in the text. So if you keep those lines in, you have to have some take on them. I think the Almina Macbeth's take is they're really playing up the ways in which Macbeth and Lady Macbeth are performing virtue. You know, like we see them literally on a stage at the banquet. And so it really brings out the ways in which they're saying one thing and meaning another. But it's like it's in the whole text. People are constantly talking about this. So I think you have to have some take on it. And then I think, like, is there a reason why? Do you have, like, what is your motivation for the breakdown between Macbeth and Lady Macbeth's marriage? Like, you could have lots of different motivations, but you have to have something. And does it make any sense that they want the crown? Like, what is the motivation for that? I think there's lots of different options, but you have to have a coherent idea. And then I think this is a play that's really interested in succession, right? It's about, like, Banquo's kids are going to be kings. Macbeth doesn't have kids. We deal with Malcolm and Duncan. So if you kind of, I think you have to have some way of taking an interest in that. So I kind of think you have to have answers to these questions in order to have a successful Macbeth. And maybe you can get away with screwing up a couple of them.
What if you just stab people in the fog?
So that's kind of what I mean about idea. I mean, there's the alternative, which is like the Benedict Cumberbatch Hamlet, which is a play of quote unquote ideas, where they're like, what if we put him in a toy soldier outfit? What if we have somebody dance on the table? Like, you know, it has like all kinds of what ifs that aren't really coherent as far as helping to illuminate the play. I don't mean that. But I do think you have to have, like, where are you setting it and why is it there? How does this help us understand the play in a new context or perhaps in a modern context? Like, I think Nicholas Heitner's Shakespeare is brilliant at this, that he often sets things in a somewhat modern context, and by doing that helps us to sort of see the play as relevant to us today, whether that's like Othello as a sort of Iraq war kind of production or Hamlet in a kind of Eastern European surveillance state. I think he thinks this or, you know, Brutus as an academic in Julius Caesar. I think that there's a lot of, he thinks a lot about, I think the world building really matters, and he thinks about how to do that really explicitly, which I don't think means you have to have, like, he likes to have big sets and have a really obvious setting. I think you can do a stripped down production just as well, but then you also have to have coherent metaphors, like that Hamlet that you and I saw, Mary Angela, at Stratford with Jonathan Gold, I think. Yeah. Which has been recorded. Yep. Like, that was a very stripped down production, but it used a lot of metaphor with how it had its sets. So that's what I mean by I think Shakespeare needs to have, like, I think you need to have a take. I think if all you're doing is saying the lines, you have no reason to exist. Like, maybe you are making money as a theater company getting in the over 70 crowd, but I don't think that that's artistically interesting.
That was the end of this excerpt from our bonus episode on Joel Coen's The Tragedy of Macbeth. The full members-only episode goes on for 55 more minutes. In it, we dig into why we felt Coen's adaptation was so flat, how it compares to other Macbeths, what did and didn't work about the two lead performances, and why Catherine Hunter's witches are so much fun. To listen to the full episode, become a member at 7th-row.com/join. You'll get to listen to our entire podcast archive, gain a host of other perks, and support our work while you do it.